Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Star Wars Junk Podcast, your home for all your Star Wars junk needs. Tonight, we're discussing that Phil Lord and Chris Miller were removed from the Han Solo spinoff film. Check out our sponsor, SkywardFunSupply.com, from Funko Pops to 3¾-inch figures and all the way to 6-inch Black Series. Check them out for all your Star Wars toy needs. My name is Zach Weber. Tonight, I'm joined by Mark.
Hey, guys.
Jim.
Good evening.
Mr. Star Wars Junk Darren.
Hello, everybody.
In addition, I have the pleasure of announcing Justin Zenger as the host of Zeng This Podcast as a new member of the Star Wars Junk Podcast team. Zenger, welcome.
I am one with the Force, and the Force is with me.
Join us as we discuss these topics. All right, guys, so I imagine us, along with the rest of the Star Wars world, were in a complete meltdown yesterday evening when we had heard that Phil Lord and Chris Miller were removed from Star Wars Story, the Han Solo film.
What? Our wait, do what? I hadn't heard this. What happened?
Oh, man, we got a smartass. yeah, so guys, what did we think about this? I would imagine we all were blindsided by this.
Yes, we were. This was a surprising news. I did not expect this coming. I know that there was an article I read on Star Wars News that referred to something that came out a few weeks ago in regards to styles, but I wasn't expecting this, especially since it seems like they're 3/4 on the way in of filming, the Han Solo spinoff. It was just so off guard.
I'm concerned that the directions have been dropped, but at the same time, I'm not, because Disney is Disney and they'll throw whatever amount of money they need to at this project to make it work. It's just the timing is very odd, but this isn't the first time that a movie's been this far along, if not further along, and had the director drop out or removed and then they've continued on. So, I mean, It's definitely odd, and I don't think it's a complete bad omen for the movie, but I'm just interested to see where things go from here on what they're going to do, whether they delay it, whether it keeps going, like whether they start from scratch, who knows? It could go anywhere, and that's what I'm interested in personally.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough decision. Ain't it weird, though, that just like 2 days before this, everyone was talking about the Episode IX director and if he was going to get fired? And then it turns out that, hey, it's Han Solo directors that got fired.
That is interesting.
Although you do bring up an interesting talking point there, too, which we could probably discuss it later on here. But Jim,
I was looking at is that, like you were saying, Zenger, it's just the whole idea of, like, yes, Disney will keep throwing money. Again, they have unlimited coffers. They're just going to keep throwing enough money at this until it goes away, the problem. But I'm looking at this in more of a broader aspect, is that what's this going to do for other Star Wars films? Is because now someone, I forget who it was, I read it on Twitter the other day or yesterday sometime, saying that there's a 50% chance if you direct a Star Wars movie, you will be fired or somewhat replaced during the process. The only split vote at this point is Trevorrow, and that's because he really is still probably in the early stages of pre-production. And that's what it comes down to. So you have J.J. Abrams, and you hear stories during The Force Awakens that he had not problems during pre-production, but like Disney was constantly throwing hurdles at him that he had to overcome. Then we all know the Gareth Edwards thing that happened where he got replaced during post-production. And really the only director that hasn't had any sort of horror stories is Rian Johnson, who seems to be the epitome of a team player in all this.
That we have heard yet, anyway.
I don't know. We hear by now there are problems.
Let's go over, some of the stuff we've read about real quick. So, we got the official press release that, it said, quote unquote, creative differences. And then it says on there, literally says on there that it's still slated for May 2018. We got, the Hollywood, trade magazine, THR? Or
Hollywood Reporter.
Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah, the Hollywood Reporter. We got the Hollywood Reporter, the initial article that came out about it. And then, there were some other follow-up articles from, like, Variety and, Hollywood Reporter, another follow-up article by them, and basically saying that they were fired, And but no, there's two sides of looking at this. There's a side of, well, Lucasfilm, they know how what a Star Wars film feels like. They know what the essence of Han Solo is. So, let you know, if these directors are not going with that, they have continuously clashed with the vision of Kathleen Kennedy and what, you know, and what she wants, and what and Kazan as well, what they want, you know, for Han Solo, and they're not doing it well, then they gotta you know, let him go. On the flip side, though, you know, this is something that is a question that we can discuss here, is that, you know, we something like this happened with last year with Rogue One. You know, Rogue One did get finished. Principal Utsarfi went on, but then you know, we had these reshoots, and they had to bring in another person, and now we have this with these two directors for the Solo film. So the question is there a pattern going on here? You know, so that's the other flip side of looking at things. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Who are you guys siding with? Is it just more nuanced than that?
Well, it's more, from what I read, y'all correct me if I'm wrong, but I've been trying to keep up with everything from yesterday's fast pace, but it was mostly Lawrence Kasdan that had a problem, or the most biggest problem with the Lord and Miller, is that right?
That's my understanding of it.
Yeah, and he knows Han Solo better than anybody else.
Mark brought this up, and I'm going to push back on it a little bit, is that I imagine, have you guys seen Empire Dreams, the 2-hour documentary?
Yes.
You know, one about the original trilogy?
Yes.
Yes, I've seen that one.
Okay. When that was, there's a segment in that, and it takes place between Empire and Return of the Jedi. Kasdan's being interviewed about the fate of Han Solo between those two films. And Kasdan was the one who originally always wanted Han Solo to die. And Lucas overruled him on that. So, every time I think about the fact that Kasdan gets so much creative control over this, which now it's kind of interesting that he's had his hands involved in The Force Awakens and that he was so deeply involved with this that he actually got the directors fired. So, I just find it's interesting that a screenwriter can have, or I guess he's also a producer on this, can have that much clout over this, over the directors that were hired to helm it. It just, it happens though, but. Talk about not having any faith in your directors.
Well, this is Kasdan's pet project, from what I understand. He's been pushing, trying to get a Han Solo movie off the ground way before Disney bought it.
Oh, really? I never heard that.
Yeah, so he's always been a fan of Han Solo. So he's always wanted to do this. But I think he was actually talking to Lucas, but I can't remember if Lucas didn't want to do it or just kept pushing it off. So I think Disney reached out to Kasdan. I think they made the deal before any director came on.
Well, I've got something too, just to ponder on for all this. Disney has, I think, a shadow looming over them of the prequel trilogy. I'm not trying to start a prequel argument, but I'm just saying they're probably trying to avoid any comparisons or anything that could bring back that prequel discussion of, oh, well, maybe Lucas should be back in charge, or, you know, I think that that's what they're fearing right now, and that's why they're trying to make these movies perfect and right in order of how they want it. So maybe that has something to do with all these directors, you know, issues that are going on, is that Disney has a, this is how we want this, period, and they're trying to stick to it just so they have complete control over what they put out, in fear of possibly having an issue, a prequel issue, to where it's not universally accepted like some of their other stuff has been recently.
Right. And Disney has to get it right. Lauren Miller can come in and make a bad movie and say, sorry, my bad, and move on with their career. But Disney's got more to lose if it's a bad Han Solo movie.
Well, my thing about this is that they've been working on this film for 2 years. It's like, at what point do you sit there, I don't know about you guys, though, but I think we've all collaborated with other people, whether it be in middle school, high school, in our adult lives, and after about a couple of days, you can kind of feel out your audience in the sense of who you're working with. It's like it took this long, and really, they didn't understand how Lord and Miller did things to the point where they actually fired them during the shoot. That just comes across as poor planning,
yeah, in my opinion. That was always weird, too, unless Lord Miller hit it, unless they played ball at the beginning and you know, kissed ass, which I can't see them doing.
But you can do research, like, though. These guys have a track record. Like, I can't imagine it's a secret how they directed, like, how they were on set. Like, it's the behavior. I can't imagine. Think about it. They've done, not counting their animated movie. Think about the Jump Street movies. It's like they haven't established that those, both of those movies made serious money for their respective studio.
And that's why they were hired.
Zinger,
made a buttload.
Zinger, you made an interesting point, about avoiding, like things from the prequels. Although I was thinking it more like this, I was thinking it more in the sense that maybe it's, Lord and Miller were trying to do something too different, and with the Han Solo film, maybe they were trying to be more comedic with Han or something. And maybe Disney Lucasfilm got a little nervous with that, that they were doing something a little too different for their taste, and Lord and Miller just they kept persisting on this on being too different, and then Disney just pulled the, Lucasfilm, Kathleen Kennedy pulled the plug and said, "No, I'm sorry, we can't go on with this." That's how I was thinking about it.
This is Jim. That got mentioned in the articles. That
they don't want to take risk or something like that. I don't know.
Here's the problem for those two guys. They come into a well-established universe with a character that is beloved and has a record of acting a certain way. And I agree with Zach's got it right, and I think Darren's got it right. There is an epic failure here of communication and what was really going on with this movie to get to this stage of the game. It's almost unprecedented to get to this stage of the game of a major blockbuster movie and have literally come to a screeching halt and almost a funeral pyre. I think Zach's on it, and there. This is an epic failure of communication. Something somewhere, like Darren said, maybe they played ball early on, and then they thought maybe we can fix this. I would love to know what was the breaking point on this at this stage of the game. To know, was it because they were filming in England and Kennedy and them were over here in the States, and they were able to get it to this point? But to get to this way with, I think the character, I think they were concerned about the character and how the character is being portrayed. But I also think this is just an epic failure. As I said, I'm not sure how many times this has ever happened and the movie's actually pulled through and made money in terms of that. Zach, you've researched that a little bit.
Well, so I actually did some research on it too.
Well, not to be cynical though, but I think we all will agree on this. The Han Solo movie could be 2 hours of the title card, and it would still break records. Like again, it'd make as much money as Rogue One did. It's like the fan base is going to turn out no matter what it is.
You're right. But if it's done poorly and not quality, they're going to get absolutely hammered.
Yes and no. This is my issue with this is that correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think anybody here is a Lucasfilm insider. If you are, please speak up.
I'm absolutely kidding.
For making Star Wars, so I know a little bit. I'm just kidding.
No, but like what I'm trying to think though is that how much of this is the action that took place in the last couple days, Lucasfilm learning from what happened with Rogue One? Obviously, Rogue One was it's kind of like the 3 Mile Island of Star Wars for them, or in the sense of they absolutely panicked when whatever that initial cut of Rogue One was, they were terrified by it. Because you do not sit there, pour that much money and resources into something, take the director, again, Gareth Edwards, off of his movie because of that. And I think that's what this was. They saw the amount of effort and the amount of PR spin they had to do to spin Rogue One. And it worked. I think we were all kind of blown away by Rogue One as we were discussing before we were recording.
Yeah.
And I think that's what this was. They learned a very hard lesson with Rogue One, and they won, which is very rare. It's very rare to sit there, have to do that much reshoots. I think anybody who's followed the Suicide Squad incident, where they had a fantastic trailer that didn't reflect the film at all, and they had to sit there and make changes. And I think that's what it comes down to, is that they said, okay, we are not going to let this be another Rogue One. We are not going to go back how many months later and try fixing this. We are going to fix it right. We're going to cut it off right now. And even though, again, it's going to look really bad, and I'm going to bring up another point later on, but not now, though. But I think that's what it is. They learned their lesson from Rogue One, and that's why they put a stop to it as fast as they possibly could.
But it almost seems like it was on the path of Rogue One. Maybe, see, Rogue One started having problems, and Garrett Thomas, that's his name, Gareth, what's his name?
Edwards,
okay.
Yeah.
He played ball and brought in the other guy, and they fixed it. But it seems like these two didn't want to play ball once they saw that it was going the wrong direction.
I agree, because Gareth Edwards, even though they brought Tony Gilroy in for the reshoots, he was still on as the main guy, as director on the credits. He was on at the premiere. He was still there promoting and marketing the film, even once Gilroy stepped in. But these guys, it just seems like they're getting completely detached from it. But this comes back to the question: is there a pattern going on here with Lucasfilm? Are they trying to play it too safe, or what's the deal going on? Is there an issue with the leadership as well? That's another question that can come to mind. Do they not want to experiment too much? Are they not wanting to take risk, or what's the deal here?
I want to answer this question, but I'm gonna let someone else go ahead of me.
Well, it seemed like they took risks with Rogue One. I was surprised some of the risks they took, but I'm sure they've got the sandbox they want to work in, and they don't want to get too far away from. You can't have a Star Wars movie that doesn't have Star Wars,
right? And you got to also consider too, though, that this is a spinoff film, so they can veer off a little into it, their own sort of genre, so to speak. But I guess maybe they don't want to go too far off. I mean,
yeah, but you still got to feel like you're in that universe. You can't go. You can't, if Han Solo slapsticking and falling down being funny, it just ain't gonna. It's not gonna work.
Well, I mean, the Marvel movies. I know that's another Disney property, and that has not been devoid of reshoots itself. DC does too, and it seems like that's the going thing right now. Is a lot of movies do a lot of reshoots. But with Marvel, it's the same thing. Every Marvel movie, even though how vaguely they are connected, has to still feel like a Marvel movie, and too much of a departure from that isn't good. So I think, once again, with this, that might be the same case. But also, I think these drastic reshoots are something that's just going to become more and more common with all movies soon, is that, maybe a first screening doesn't work out. Maybe these scenes don't work. And it's just become a more common thing for reshoots, but it's depending on how much of the movie are they having to reshoot? Because all movies have a certain amount of reshoots. It's just how much do you reshoot at the movie? And this one, I mean, who's to know? You said it, what it was, three-fourths of the way done? Right? Wasn't that the quote?
Yeah, that's this. Yes.
That's just a guesstimate.
Yeah. 4 months.
Well, no, at this point, three-quarters, because I went through all the trade articles today, and I picked out the highlights of them, and there's a lot of... They all seem to agree on the same number of bullet points. Again, three quarters of the film was shot. They were fired. They did not leave voluntarily. But just going back to one thing Zenger said, I just want to talk about, is that there is a difference between reshoots and pickups. Pickup, like the Marvel films undergo pickups, where it's like, okay, they change a couple of things here and there. They do this for a couple of weeks. Again, pickups. It's not meant for... My favorite example to describe pickups, it was during Revenge of the Sith, and it's after the duel on Mustafar, Lucas forgot to shoot the scene of Obi-Wan picking up Anakin's lightsaber. So they had to go back, basically recreate the entire mountainside, or the hillside of Mustafar, and reshoot that scene. Again, that's more of a pickup. That's not a reshoot.
Oh, so it's a scene where someone has to go back and pick something up. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I know.
I'm kidding.
Well, that's the only thing. It's not the perfect example because we need a drum sound. Exactly. Thank you. Who needs a soundboard? But no, and that's reshoots, and that's a difference. Like, that's a pickup where you go back, there's a couple of things missing, or like, let's say they shoot one scene, or even there's another one from The Phantom Menace. where I think it was during the Naboo when they're escaping the blockade around Naboo during the Phantom Menace. And apparently that scene, I think it was like Ewan McGregor said, oh, this is a really like a bland scene. I was like, oh man, we got to get past the Trade Federation ship. And to go back and put a little bit more of pep into it, just make it a little more exciting. That's a pickup where you have to tweak something. Reshooting is you take the entire third act of a film and say, we have to get rid of this and alter the tone or the direction it's going in. Reshoots are never a good thing. Pickups are 100% standard. And that's why, and I don't think, again, at this point, it seems like they're not going to have a new director come in and change anything fundamentally outside the tone. But who knows? That could change the whole film. But that's what bothers me, though. It's like, I would imagine when you're sitting at Lucasfilm, and it's like, whatever, does anyone know when Lord Miller signed on to direct this? Does anybody have a concrete date?
I think about less. I mean, it was around the end of the year.
Was it? Whatever it was. It had to be at least a year and a half ago by this
point. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, not last year.
But, like, how do you not sit there and sit down with these guys and say, okay, this is what we're going for? It's like, think about it. Like, this is, like, imagine this is a $200 million project. How do you not sit there and literally flesh out every single facet of it? That, like Jim was saying, as a business, forget about Star Wars. Take Star Wars and our fandom out of this. As a business venture, how do you let it get this far, or even let it even get to the point of principal photography without nailing down everything you're going to do? It's like, if Kathleen Kennedy wants to hire, I don't want to say up-and-coming directors, but young guys, not Ron Howard. Again, Lord and Miller are not Ron Howard. If you're going to hire young guys who have their own flavor and style, you either tell them, okay, we're letting you do what you want, shoot as much as you want, and then we're going to come back during editing and piece together what tone we want, or do it the way we want and just be lucky that your vision coincides with ours when it does. That's what it's the business aspect of this that completely baffles me.
Yeah, like, I don't get it. I mean, it's I understand, this is just all around an epic fail. I mean, they've set themselves up for a huge failure, and like Xander said, there's lots of money to be thrown at this, and that's fine. But man, why? They're smarter than this. At least you think you'd like to think they are.
Well, from what I've heard, now this is probably all stuff, nothing official. That, you know, they've clashed since day one, but they've been able to work with it. But there's one or two key scenes that Lauren Miller put their foot down on, and that's when I guess Kasdan or Kennedy or Disney had enough of it, because they refused to change this one or two key scenes. But you would think that when the script was being written and in pre-production, they would have all this figured out of where they were going.
When you just mentioned the script, so one of the things I read was that Chris Lord and Miller, they like to kind of ad-lib a little, improvise a little within the script, you know, working with the script. But, you know, like add a line here or there and whatever. But from what I read, Lawrence Kasdan was not a big fan of that. And so was Kathleen Kennedy. They're more like stick to script type of folks.
Then why even bother hiring them then? I'm not yelling at you, Mark, but I mean, like, though, like, if that's the case,
no, I know
they must, like, I think Kathleen Kennedy, as we've discussed already, has been around for how many years in show business?
Yeah.
I imagine she has contacts at all the studios these guys have worked at and could say, oh, like, I would imagine on every Lucasfilm project or director shortlist, there's got to be at least 15 people for every single project. And you're telling me there was not, like, if they really did want someone who's just going to toe the company line, like Xander said, why not just hire, like, a Peyton Reed after what happened with the Edgar Wright Ant-Man issue? Hire somebody, or as I joked last time, hire a Brett Ratner. Hire someone who's going to be a corporate shill, who's going to have no artistic vision, and will do whatever the studio wants. Why even bother hiring someone?
Because that, you need somebody that's good. You need somebody that's good at it.
Well, there's corporate shills out there that are good.
Well, I mean, or we could decent. Say Trevor might be that kind of person. Do whatever.
You know what? Considering the fact that we recorded that last episode about me completely just crapping on Trevorrow, in retrospect, now it makes 100% sense why they cast him. Hired him. Because he will not buck whatever they want. He'll do whatever they want when they want. It makes perfect sense now.
Well, if you want me to put on a tinfoil hat real quick, what if this is, I mean, I know this is talking about a huge gamble here. What if this is all just to draw attention to the film?
Then they're pretty.
There is no such thing as bad publicity.
You're done when you got the biggest movie of the year, which is going to.
There's the Andy Warhol quote.
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, if they're causing more buzz around this right now, there's more, you know, attention being put onto something that's not going to be out for another year almost.
Yeah. If they wanted a buzz, they could release a picture of Han Solo in costume.
That's true. Like I said, I was just throwing that out there as a possibility
you don't really need a buzz for a Star Wars film. Yeah.
A buzz sooner or later. These films are going to run out. After a while, it's going to be like Marvel. By the time we're up to Captain America 12, it's going to get very hard to get excited for these movies after a while.
Hopefully the rumors of them taking a break is going to be
true. I do see what you're saying, Zinger. I do see what you're saying. I mean, that kind of happened with Rogue One, you know, that film, the whole reshoot, you know, hoopla around late May and stuff, you know, got a lot of buzz, but, you know, it turned out great still. Yes, it didn't make as much money as The Force Awakens, but that was to be expected, but it still did great. So then you do have, I think you have some point there to a certain extent. It's just that, you know, Let's talk about Kathleen Kennedy here for a bit.
Don't say nothing bad about the prequels. I won't say nothing bad about the prequels if you don't say nothing bad about Kathleen Kennedy.
No. I'm not gonna say anything bad about her. But let's discuss a little of like her track record as an executive producer. You know, she's not a director, so she's never directed anything, but she has been a producer. You posted a picture of her filmography of, you know, things she's worked on, and you said, you know, and it seems like she's had a lot more hits than misses, and which is to be expected. You know, no one's going to be 100% perfect on things. Even Spielberg isn't that. And I don't think it's a leadership problem with her. I know somebody tweeted out that maybe, you know, there's a problem with the leadership, but I don't think it's that grave. I mean, I think, you know, they've hit it out of the park with two films, you know, and that maybe it's going to be three probably with The Last Jedi, so.
But at the same time, though, how hard, like, okay, this is my example I like to use anytime somebody sits and makes a comment about, like, the state of disrepair George Lucas left Star Wars in. When the episode one re-release came out in February of 2012, everyone was like so cynical about that. Like, episode one, it's like, oh man, the crap can fly at you in 3D now and hit you in the face. And you look at that. I remember like there was so, again, 2012 was probably when prequel hatred was probably at its peak, right? It was right before the Lucasfilm sale. And all we really had was Clone Wars and on occasion a book, or maybe a new video game being discussed, but nothing more than that. And I look back at the numbers. The 3D re-release for The Phantom Menace made $43 million. If you listen to the internet or anybody, The Phantom Menace is probably in the pantheon of the most hated films of all time. If you believe the zeitgeist, The Phantom Menace
episode
was this,
two. Sorry.
Well, I know. There's a disconnect between episode one and episode two for a lot of people. It's kind of six to one, half dozen the other when it comes to the least favorite or the worst of the Star Wars films. But it's, again, episode two at least does not have a Jar Jar everyone can point to. Episode two has problems, but everybody points to Jar Jar as the ultimate failure of George Lucas. But going back to the episode one 3D, it made $43 million. A 3D re-release, by that time 3D was wearing out its welcome, of arguably one of the most disliked blockbusters in recent history. Star Wars is always going to be successful, and not take away from Kathleen Kennedy. If she wanted to crash the Lucasfilm ship into a into an object. She could. She could very easily. But at the same time, though, you have The Force Awakens, which takes three of the most iconic characters in cinematic, if not cultural, history of modern culture, and you put them back in a new Star Wars film. It's kind of like, imagine if John Lennon and George Harrison were still alive and the Beatles decided to do a reunion concert. It doesn't matter what it is. It's going to be successful. And yes, Rogue One was a slight departure from the mold. But even that, Star Wars for the foreseeable future is going to be successful, whether you're trying to deliberately drive it into an iceberg or not. And that's my issue with Kathleen Kennedy. It's like, how hard is to make a good Star Wars film, especially in today's day and age where everybody has even some talent wants to be involved with you?
Not only that.
I think with this Han Solo one, is, I've said it before, and I think it's, I don't think it was her. I think everybody was on board until Kasdan and Miller and Lord started butting heads. And, you know, and Lawrence Kasdan and Kevin Kennedy go back, friendship-wise, years and working together years. So she probably, you know, was all on board for Lauren Bell. Then started hearing all this from Kasdan of all the problems. That's probably when she just threw up her hands with it and they were gone. So I just can't believe they didn't work something out, Kasdan and Lauren Miller, more than Kennedy doing anything.
Well, that's what I mean, though. It's just, it really, I can't make sense of this no matter how hard I try. I really can't. It's like, think about it, again, not to use our own personal lives, but we've all interacted with people or had to deal with someone that after about, I don't know, a day or two, you can just figure out, okay, I'm not going to get along with this person. No matter how hard I try, this person and I are just not on the same page about most things. And that's what I mean, though. It's like, wouldn't it have been obvious after a month of shooting that Kasdan was not liking what these guys were doing? And it's not like they can start shooting things behind his back or waiting. I imagine if Kasdan wasn't on set, he had to be there the majority of the time.
Well, and he had to be there for the dailies. The dailies, somebody was looking at these dailies, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. Any part of the production.
Hey, just real quick, sorry to sound a little ignorant, but what exactly is a daily? Is it just like snippets of the film? When they record?
Basically showing what they've done.
What they've shot the day before, in terms of that, and they can make adjustments, and it kind of shows a progress to the powers that be, what's being done on the set, and whether it's up to muster or not.
Right, and it's not like it used to be where it would take weeks at a time. Now I think they can do it almost that day. I know.
Right. I assume it happens the next day.
I'm sure. I know.
Is looked at tomorrow. Absolutely.
Yeah. I know some of them, they see dailies that day and start editing on stuff. Some that's really hands on.
In that frame of reference we're talking about, this is a huge epic fail on multiple people's scale. I hope they can turn it around and pull it off. Like Zach said, it's going to make lots of money. Everybody's going to be happy. But is to get this far in the stage of the game.
Yeah, they only have one more month left to shoot, right?
Right, exactly. They were done. They're basically done with this movie, short of pickups. And then it goes into the editing room. And we all know that editing is where a movie is made. But my word, if there's this, I just don't know how you marry couple different visions of this film and make it into something that everybody's going to like.
Well, maybe they were getting to the point to where, you know, Lucasfilm, everyone behind the scenes was like, let them keep shooting stuff. We can, you know, get rid of them at, you know, once it's done in the editing process and try to edit this back together. Maybe they kept on going, you know, just give them a few more weeks. We'll salvage what they've shot. And it just got to the point where they're like, okay, enough's enough. Just get them out of here. They're really not playing ball with us anymore.
That has to be almost the way it went. They figured we can solve most of these things in the editing, because if there were issues this far back, you think they would have the dumpster fire and the fire sale and stop this before. So that you're dealing with intelligent people, that's got to be what they said and saw and said, that's what we'll do.
And it had to be pretty bad for them to fire them this late in the game. Because you know they knew it was going to be a PR nightmare. And you know the last thing, especially after Rogue One, they didn't want to fire them and put it out there in the press. Because because they're already getting, you know, flack from Rogue One. They was getting people, oh, I don't need a Han Solo movie. And then you're going to fire the directors 4 months in. I don't think they fired them until they felt they were finally at the end of the rope and had no other choice.
That's just what I think, too.
It's so unusual. Zach, you went back and looked at this. What's the other movie that had this play out sort of like this?
I read an article just before we got on here about a couple of films that that went through the same thing. Let me pull that up real quick. But the most pronounced example that I know off the top of my head was, did any of you see The Island of Dr. Moreau, the 1996?
Oh, I might have the same list pulled up, by the way.
All right. It's what, a Variety article? It's one of the trades.
I actually got IGN.
Oh, okay.
Well, but they have Superman.
Yeah, Superman too. Notorious.
Well,
only 25% of Richard Donner's film, because he filmed both Superman 1 and 2 at the same time, was used in the actual cut of Superman 2. Now, they did put out the Richard Donner cut later, but only 25%. So if you take that into what's going on with Star Wars right now, that's the same percent that's left unshot.
But at the same time, though, look at that in the inverse. That 25% means you at least have 75% of an open sandbox to play in. Now they only have 25% to play in. And that's the issue. Are they good? And this is how I keep looking at this. And just hold your thought for a second, Jim, about other movies. Is that how I keep hearing this, and again, I think everybody else is corroborating what I'm thinking. The difference between what Lord and Miller want, they want to do something more in line with what they did with 21 Jump Street, the reboot movies. They wanted more of a tongue-in-cheek slapstick film where it seems Kasdan had more of a Lethal Weapon or even a Die Hard with a Vengeance flavor, where it was much more, even though there is some humor in there, and it's much more sarcastic humor as opposed to slapstick. Am I wrong with that, or you pick up on that too?
That's the sense I took from the articles. I agree with that. That's a good way to put it.
That's how I see it, although I haven't seen some of these movies that you mentioned, but that's how I think of it as well.
All right, how many of you have seen Die Hard with a Vengeance?
That's
the third one, right?
Yes, it is the third one.
Die Hard long ago.
Well, that's what I think I'm getting the vibe of. You're gonna have the John McClane who's gonna be kind of the stoic hero who on occasion makes quips, and then you're gonna have the Samuel L. Jackson who will be the Chewbacca of this, who's kind of along for the ride, kind of against his will at the beginning, and by the end he's full fledged with John McClane, aka Han Solo. And that's just the vibe I'm getting though, but again, I don't mean to repeat myself, but how do you not iron this out within the first couple? Like, when you're designing concept art, when you're meeting with the toy people and the Lego people, like everyone keeps talking on the internet yesterday saying, oh, they should just scrap the entire film. They can't scrap the film. You know how much of the license partners are making T-shirts and toys and action figures and all the other ancillary merchandise? The ship's full speed going toward the May release date. They might be able to get away with December.
The millions in already. Well, let me ask you this. You know, everybody's like Kathleen Kennedy or Disney should have known. But shouldn't Lord Miller knew that, hey, they're going to want us to play ball. We're not them type of guys. Let's not take this offer they're giving us. So don't they have just as much blame for taking something they knew they wasn't going to be able
to play? Well, no. I do not blame them for any. Oh, again, I don't blame them for this. I blame the studio. Because the studio is a – hold on. Just hold that thought, Mark. The studio gets nervous, and that's what it is, though. Again, it cannot be overstated. The Force Awakens made $2 billion. $2 billion off being – again, Zinger, we'll have to get into your opinions on The Force Awakens one day. I don't care what anyone says. It's a retread. It's nostalgia. It's not fan service. It's 100% nostalgia. And when nostalgia makes $2 billion, it changes a lot of what your plans are. And I would imagine they probably had a script outline, or at least were in very early talks with Lord Miller when The Force Awakens box office total started coming in, or at least when it started getting toward the end of its run. And I think everybody would be surprised how that changes how a corporation thinks, because that's how forecasts are changed and projections. And that makes a massive difference in how the projects are being crafted.
But you don't think they have any blame themselves for taking the role?
Well, think of it like this, Darren. I hire you. I'm hiring. Your job is to paint my house. Right. Or to paint, or okay, let me do a better analogy. You are a painter who works exclusively in doing portraits. You look at my prior work of doing, I look at your prior work of doing portraits, and I like your prior work. I say, you know what, Darren, I really like how you do things. I like your brush strokes. I like how you've done all your other portraits. I'm going to hire you to do my portrait. And you do your portrait the exact same way as you've always done them. You do it in the way that we both agreed upon. And then you're 3/4 way through doing my portrait, and my wife comes up to me and says, I really don't like this. It kind of makes your hips look big, and you look puffy in the face. And I say, well, and you turn around and say, well, didn't we agree on this walking in? Well, yeah, but my wife doesn't really like what you're doing, though. But can you try to fix it a little? And you go, well, how do I fix it? I'm 3/4 way done. Well, try something. We'll come back in a week later. So a week goes by, and you try to touch it up, though, but still, you are who you are as an artist. You're not going to change fundamentally over one job, especially when you have a track record. So after that, I come back to you, and my wife's still telling me, I don't mean to say Kathleen Kennedy's wife. I'm not trying to imply that she's nagging. If anything, Kasdan's the wife here. And it's like, well, my wife still doesn't like what you're doing. Can you try one more time? And you say, no, because I can't try. After a while, it's not going to be my work. You're basically dictating how I do this, so why even bother I'm doing it? Then you reach an impasse, and the entire thing collapses.
But they knew when they took the job that they had a nagging wife to deal with. But let me ask you this. Let's say the guy.
Before you go on, I want to add on to say that the responsibility here lies with the studio. You know, if the studio, if Lord Miller, you know, they did their, they were doing their thing, they kept doing their thing the way they wanted to do it, and yet, you know, Kathleen Kennedy didn't say anything, and up until now, this is all their response. This is ultimately the responsibility of Kathleen Kennedy. And I mean, yeah, you know, you could say Lauren Miller should take some blame, but the buck stops with Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm. That's how I see it.
Okay. Well, let me ask Zach this. Let's say the guy next to me got his house painted blue. It was great and everything. So he recommended two painters, right? And I told him, I said, I want my wife wants my house painted yellow, like the one you did next door, did it blue. And they said, sure, we love yellow. So they start painting it yellow, they get done. But then I get home and it's blue. And they said, well, we didn't like yellow, so we decided to make it blue. And I said, that's not my fault for hiring them.
Well, I don't think, but that's, the, I don't think that's a, but that's a breach of contract.
And yeah, I imagine fired. They didn't follow
I don't think you could sit there. I don't think these guys, like if these guys were Gareth Edwards, yes. If they were relatively inexperienced, I would maybe believe that. But they have established track records. I don't think they would sit there, promise Lucasfilm and the Disney Corporation X, and then give them Y instead.
They might have had all attention to start with. But hey.
But why would they do that? Okay, Darren, what do you get for promising them one thing and then trying to pull a fast one on them?
Halfway. I don't think they did it on purpose. I think that...
I don't know, though. But I have a hard time believing... I have more... Like Mark said, the corporation changes its mind far more often than the artist does.
Right. I think they're all share blame.
You know, you bring up a good point right there, Zach, about, you know, differences between Gareth Edwards and, you know, this duo here, Miller and Lord. That Garrett is a young filmmaker, and you know he hasn't established himself as like what his style is. He's not Steven Spielberg, you know. He doesn't have a certain track record. Lord Miller, they kind of do already. They have some past work. They kind of feel like they've earned the right to put in their own artistic spin on things, and I guess that clash with Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm. And you know, they may not have said anything about it initially, and maybe they thought that they could, you know, fix things along the way, and then they just got to a certain point where they just went a little too far and diverged a little too far, and then they're, you know, Kathleen Kennedy was like, gotta pull the plug on this. Right. And
this is where I have to push back on this. If they really were in breach of contract, you can go back to them and say, okay, guys, this is not what we agreed upon. I just have a hard time believing, considering the fact that these guys, and I'm looking at their filmography right now, again, they've done four films, and every single one of them has been successful. So I can't imagine them sitting there.
They hadn't done a movie with this much scrutiny, I don't think, with this much people telling
them. Oh, the Lego movie? Can you think of all the different people that had their fingers in that Lego movie?
Yeah, I would have raised hell if that movie came out as crap. I'm just kidding, though.
Well, did anyone expect the Lego movie to do what it did?
Yeah, they wouldn't. I mean, they didn't have to get every. Right. You got to get almost every little sentence. You got a whole canon to worry about with Star Wars that you don't with Lego or 21 Jump Street.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe they weren't playing ball with what the canon they wanted to do was. Yeah. Maybe that was causing some tension.
This movie's not just setting up Han Solo. I mean, it's setting up a comics going to spun out in this movie. And even maybe a Lando movie from rumors. So they've got to have everything, you know, pointing in the same direction.
I don't think it's more of a storyline thing. It's more of a style thing. You know, I mean, they're gonna follow the storyline. I mean, I don't think that would be a outright breach of contract if they all of a sudden did something completely different than what, you know, as far as the story goes. But I think it's more of the style that was the issue.
And well, what it sounds like, they wanted a Western, and them guys wanted 21 Jump Street in space. But they should have worked all that out. I agree with everybody. They should have worked all that out before they hired them.
Well, here's something else that's got to be played out. All these actors and all this staff and all the studios and the sets and everything, the people that work on this, are probably already committed to the next movie because they run on timetables like everybody else. This is going to take some, if they have to do a lot with this film, a lot of the actors, the support staff and everything it's going to get messy.
I don't see how they're going to make that May release date.
Well, from my understanding is that they built in already dates for reshoots and whatnot.
Yeah, but you're not talking about reshoots. You're talking about rebooting the movie.
No, I know. That said, I wouldn't be surprised if they do push it to December.
I thought they were going to push it anyway, but everybody said I was stupid for saying they're going to push it. So maybe I'll sound smart now.
At the end of our Han Solo release date, or whatever, episode 9 release date episode, I said that if we made it past D23, we'd be fine. Considering the fact we're still a month away from D23, there's a good chance it gets pushed back.
A little less than a month. Get a trailer.
I guess a Han Solo trailer is out of them, because I'm sure they don't want
to. You're not going to see anything of that movie until the earliest episode 8. You're not seeing anything. Because they don't want a
trailer full of cutscenes. They aren't going to listen to that.
At this point, I'm surprised they don't just release an episode 8 trailer to get everybody to look away from all this. just cut a new episode 8 trailer. No one will care about that 5 minutes later.
Well, I agree.
With this Han Solo film, we're talking that there's an assumption that what they've shot is good.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
What if there's not enough there to salvage and they're bringing a new director in? We're back to epic failure. And if there's not enough there to shoot, you bring another director in. You have to get all the staff, all the actors, all the sets. Remember, those studios where they're filming in are already booked for a studio, another movie to start.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, they got to start working on.
I want to say one thing too about the Han Solo film as far as expectations go. Even in the beginning, before you know any principal photography took place, even before the few months that Lord and Miller were first announced to direct, a lot of people were already thinking, this is an unnecessary film, this isn't going to be that great, yada yada yada. So I think what I've been seeing is that since then, people have had low expectations for the film. With this news that happened, I think it's become more of a pressing matter to let's really have local expectations for the film. I know we all want to have a perfect Star Wars film. We want to have a perfect spin-off film, but I think, a push comes to shove, we may just need to lower our expectations for it. With what happened. I'm prepared to do that. I don't know about you guys, but I'm prepared to have low expectations for it.
Mark, this cannot be the second episode.
Like the we should have expectations like the prequels.
No, well, I mean,
number one.
I don't want to get into that, but I mean, like,
is there a prequel counter for how many times it gets mentioned?
Or considering it that okay. along with the Lego counter.
What I'm saying is that. You know, it already kind of had people, you know, had already low expectations about it. You know, people didn't want, a lot of people, when I mean by people, I mean like hardcore fans and like forums and comment sections of like Star Wars fan sites, like Star Wars Newsnet's, you know, comment section and some of their articles. Oh, God, some of it is atrocious. But anyway, point is that people already kind of had low expectations for it, so you know we may have to prepare ourselves for it.
Well, that's kind of genius, isn't it? Because then you go in thinking you're going to get Masters of the Universe movie, and you get, you know, a great Star Wars.
Well, the reason why people are already kind of having low expectations on it is because a lot of people feel that the Han Solo character is already well defined, you know, from the original trilogy, and you know we left him in The Force Awakens. They don't think that it's necessary to go into his backstory of his younger years. You know, so hence why, in fact, they think it may ruin his character, you know, if they show him. So that's just things I've read. I mean, I don't mind the Han Solo, young Han Solo spinoff film. I'm kind of excited to see, you know, what they'll have to show us. But I'm tempering my expectations for it. And,
right. And there's a lot riding, like there was a lot riding on Rogue One being it was the first spinoff movie, but this is the first, you know, character movie that's probably going to set up an Obi-Wan movie. So they got to make sure, you know, they don't want to stumble out the gate again.
Who do we want to see replace Lord and Miller? As we all know, there's three names that are floating around. Of those three, we have Ron Howard, we have Joe Johnson, who is the director and also was a creative on the original trilogy. He was a concept artist and he helped design things.
Yeah, like who did he design?
Oh, it doesn't need to be said. We have to get a Boba Fett counter soon too. After we get the prequel counter and the late.
Fun drinking game out of this.
I know. Oh, you wait then until we start getting into The Force Awakens. Then everyone just starts pelting me with rocks.
Oh God! How does anybody not like The Force Awakens? I don't understand.
I'll raise my hand.
He doesn't completely hate it. He just, you know.
I'm not thrilled with it. And I will make that very loud.
But you like the Clone Wars. But you like Clone Wars.
The Clone Wars animated movie is a better Star Wars movie than The Force Awakens. I will say that.
Holiday special is better than the Clone Wars.
No. The Holiday special is amazing, but for completely different reasons.
I know the Clone Wars ain't bad good. It's just bad.
Every film is good in its own way.
All right. Okay, I can say. See, this is, I can feel the rocks being pelted at me through the internet.
Oh, the Clone Wars.
But we have three
directors: Ron Howard, Joe Johnston, and Lawrence Kasdan. Of those three, who would we want to direct this or pick up the pieces?
I think
Lawrence Kasdan, but he's not going to direct.
I would say Ron Howard, mainly because I read something about that. There's some rules regarding about Kasdan, something about that you can't get a Kasdan new director.
Kasdan would be prohibited from, because of the Directors Guild rules, he'd be prohibited from doing this because producers aren't allowed to go into the director's chair after throwing a director off the film.
Right. It looks like he fired him to get the job, I guess, to stop
this. This is why Lucas did not like the Hollywood. This is when we fought back against it. But yeah, that's another story. Yeah.
But can y'all see? I can't see Ron Howard doing it. I can't see
him
and taking over and playing ball like that because he's really got his own vision. And now maybe if he starts over, I can see Ron Howard coming in.
No, because Ron Howard's going to toe the company line. He's going to do exactly what he's told. And he, you know what? He's calm, demure. He's not going to upset the apple cart. He's going to do exactly what he's told to do.
What's the last film he directed? It was 100%,
but I can't see him putting his name on a 20% work that he's done.
Well, that brings up, okay, let me answer Mark's question. The last movie Ron Howard directed, and I could be wrong, was the Dan Brown book Inferno.
Correct.
Which absolutely bombed at the box office.
When did it come out?
2016.
Yeah, this year.
He also directed.
This is how you can tell that I'm not a movie buff, that I'm not like a, you know, a connoisseur in movies. I don't watch many movies. But anyways.
Well, it all looks like it's probably that Tom Hanks trilogy, and they all look alike. So.
Well, he also did the In the Heart of the Sea, which is a vague adaptation of the Moby Dick story.
Oh, yeah.
Rush. He does very human stories that tell a human story. So, I mean, if they're trying to get a human story out of the Han Solo movie, which I can't see the other directors that that's what they were trying to do. So that's why
I think they want to play ball director, and I just can't see Ron Howard. Well, unless they start over.
Let's throw in the dark horse. How about what? Let's say they don't go with any of these three. Let's say they get somebody else. Like, what about Robert Zemeckis?
Isn't he busy making The Flash? I had heard somewhere that he wants to do The Flash now.
Looking it up.
That sounds horrible.
I heard that Lord and Miller were gonna go back to do The Flash, but.
Well, that's what I heard too, though. But I heard since, because that Flash movie's had like six directors since they left or they walked away from that. And I heard that Robert Zemeckis was circling it, but now
Zemeckis. Okay, sorry, I had a brain fart. I thought you were talking about Rodriguez. That's why I was like,
"Oh, that'd be fine. I'd be fine with that. Oh, that'd be fantastic." Talking about that'd be worse than Josh Trank.
What about the Bird guy? What, the Brad Bird?
Oh, there's no way Brad Bird's gonna go. Brad Bird's making Incredibles 2 right now.
I don't think they're gonna get anybody household name to finish it up.
You know who they might do, and I heard someone talk about this, would be Simon Kinberg.
Oh, okay. I don't know him enough.
But you know, Simon Kinberg.
I know the name. But
he's the producer on, I think, Rebels. He also produces the X-Men films.
Deadpool 2.
Yeah, so I can see him bringing somebody like that in. This is going
to be. He is a, hold on. I got something. Untitled Star Wars anthology film producer announced. He's already kind of in with that crowd.
Oh, right. Yeah, he's in the Lucasfilm fold.
Oh, here we go.
Well, he's the one that he worked with Josh Trank on Fantastic Four. And everyone thinks it was Simon Kinberg who kind of brought Josh Trank into the Lucasfilm world. And then it was after how Josh Trank had the meltdown with Fantastic Four, Kinberg said, keep this guy as far away as possible from this studio.
But he is apparently directing The Dark Phoenix, which is in pre-production.
Is he really? I've heard that's still.
I'm just going on what I'm seeing on the internet right now. So.
Okay. Oh, wait, what are you reading? Are you reading some official press release about the Han Solo film? Or?
Of course not. I'm on IMDb.
Okay. I was like,
who's the guy that came in to help with Rogue One, and what's his track record?
Tony Gilroy.
Yeah, I don't know his history.
Tony Gilroy's been confirmed as saying on the record he has no part in this.
Already? I ain't as fast.
Yeah.
He must have the first. Because I think we have a J.J. Abrams saying the same thing about The Force Awakens.
Yeah. Where was that? I read somewhere that. Oh, yeah, here it is. This is from the original Variety article. It said, it's not clear who will take over directing duties from Lord Miller. Tony Gilroy oversaw some of the reshoots for Rogue One. However, he will not be directing the Han Solo film, according to his spokesperson.
Right. What has he done? Does anybody know his work?
Oh, yeah. He did Michael Clayton with George Clooney. He's involved with the Bourne films. He's a big associate with Frank Marshall, Kathleen Kennedy's husband. He's a big associate of his.
Oh, I got you. I want to thank y'all for not saying Josh Whedon.
No. He's not going to go anywhere near Disney right now.
I don't even want him near a studio.
No, after his experience with Avengers and...
He's gonna not want people meddling in what he does.
That's his thing. He's
gonna get somebody's done a few movies. Somebody that they know they can play ball with.
Yeah, someone that can toe the line.
Yeah,
somebody who can fix the problem of a movie that's three quarters shot.
I don't see how they're gonna. And how do you have a director like Ron Howard that has his own style, and then you mix it in with somebody else's style?
The color
of the film seems like it would be.
But the problem is that you guys are looking at this as if they're coming in brand new with their own vision. They're coming in kind of like what Tony Gilroy did with Rogue One. They're not coming in to give the film their own vision. They're coming in as a doctor who's there to fix the production. Like, not to backtrack it, but what Jim was asking about, when this had ever happened before. And the best example was the Island of Dr. Moreau from the mid-90s with Val Kilmer and oh my god, Marlon Brando. And what happened with that was the guy, Richard Stanley was his name. He had been working on a Dr. Moreau film for like years. And New Line Cinema gave him the go-ahead to do it. And there's a fantastic documentary about it called Lost Soul. It's like the doomed journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau. It's a huge, long title. And what it was that this guy, Richard Stanley was an eccentric. And they went to Australia to shoot this thing. And he was, like, he'd do weird things. Like, he didn't want to have production meetings wherever. He was very much loose and fast with these sort of things. And 3 days into filming, New Line fired him from the film. And he was escorted off the set by security. And he actually lived in the woods for the rest of the production, which is really funny when you think of it. He actually crashed the set a couple of times while they were filming. And they brought in a director called John Frankenheimer. Jim, do you know who John Frankenheimer is?
John Jagger.
No, I don't.
Okay, have anyone seen the original Manchurian Candidate?
It's been years.
Okay, you know that. He also did a movie called Seconds, which is a movie with Rock Hudson, fantastic science fiction movie. But no, they brought him in, and at the time, he was kind of a director that was very similar to where Ron Howard is now. He was a director that was past his prime, who really wasn't getting a lot of work anymore, and he had a history of kind of being a hard ass. He knew how to remedy things. And what they did was they brought him into the production, and basically at that point the actors had more or less lost all their morale, and Marlon Brando, being a complete psychotic by that time, took complete control. Like, if you want, you guys all know the character of Mini-Me from Austin Powers.
Yeah.
All right. Where that came from was from this version of Island of Dr. Moreau, because Marlon Brando loved this little, again, not to be condescending, but he was like the world's smallest man. That's what he was. He was the world's smallest man. And he had like one brief cameo in the film as just some sort of like mutant or experiment on the island. And Marlon Brando loved him so much as just a person. He goes, I want this guy in every single scene with me. And that's where the character, if you watch that movie, this world's smallest person was Marlon Brando's mini-me in the film. And that's where it came from. But that's a story for another day. But if you want to know what happens when a studio rips a film from a director's hands during principal photography, look up Lost Soul, The Doomed Journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau. It's a fantastic documentary, and it'll show you what happens when the studio meddles in a film during production.
Well, another one I know of is, does anyone remember the movie 13th Warrior?
Oh, with Antonio Banderas?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember.
That apparently did terrible with test audiences, so they took out the director, got Michael Crichton, right, author of Jurassic Park, and also the author of the book that the movie was based on, to come in and perform uncredited reshoots, and did a significant overhaul, changing the ending, recutting the entire film, and even changing the score. And it took about, it was a year off from its original release date because of all these changes. Did that movie do well? Meh. I remember watching it when I was younger, and it's a movie.
Yeah, but I agree that's with the that. Thing. That's a good assessment.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think, once again, going way back to our earlier discussions, that's what Disney and everyone at Lucas wants to avoid. They don't want this to be a, oh yeah, I remember the Han Solo movie. It was meh. It was there. They want it to be something iconic like everything else has been.
Oh, of course.
That's right.
Of course they do.
I'm trying to see real quick, there might be something better with the 13th Warrior. Mm-hmm. It grossed $61 million worldwide on a $160 million budget, and that's in $1999, just keep that in mind. And funny enough, talk about full circle, it was produced and funded by Touchstone Pictures, a subsidiary of the Walt Disney Company.
Whoa!
See, folks?
There you go.
Almost 20 years later, and Disney is still sticking its foot in its mouth. That's what I mean, though. It's like we, and that's what I'm trying to say, though, is that like we keep like giving Kathleen Kennedy credit and giving her grief over this, though. But this is just, for some reason, that's what's just going to happen until Lucasfilm figures out what it wants to do. And clearly, like Zinger was saying, they are trying to emulate Marvel Studios. They are trying to emulate that business model. And for whatever reason, Kevin Feige has cracked the code on it. And even though I would imagine his phone line in his office is probably open any given time for Kathleen Kennedy to walk in, it's easier said than done.
You know, I think one of the issues right now, one of the things is right now is that they're making films, like spin-off films, based on like previously done work and era-wise. You know, maybe like, you know, right now we're just getting into the sequel trilogy. And over time, there'll probably be more films that continue off from that. And within this period of these newer films, they may do spin-offs here and there, and then easier for Lucasfilm to make spin-offs based on these newer characters that will be in the future. I mean, Kylo Ren spin-off, Rose Tico spin-off, who knows? But you know, my point is that that's a challenge right now, is that they're doing spin-offs based on, you know, past established characters already, or you know, events that have timelines that have already been covered. You know, and I guess, you know, once they move away from that and they start doing their own thing, their own era, then it'll be easier for Lucasfilm to, and they'll, you know, it'll be more like Marvel. You know, they'll crack the code by then. But right now, it's because they're working with an already established universe, already established timeline, already established characters. That's how I think of it.
Right.
Just a quick note, the list I've got of movies that have had, you know, directors removed and stuff like that, or changed their direction. Oddly enough, Disney is on here several times. Toy Story 2 is on here on this list. Ratatouille, Cars 2, Brave, and The Good Dinosaur. All on this list as movies that have had overhauls done on them.
Toy Story 2, I'm surprised about that.
Originally was supposed to be a straight-to-DVD, or straight-to-home video release.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they decided to make it an actual movie, and overhaul was done in the span of about 9 months.
Right, yeah. And didn't, y'all can look real fast, didn't Jaws change directors?
Did it?
The Jaws? Like 1975 Jaws?
That's what, if I remember right, but I could be looking wrong. And I think Wizard of Oz changed directors too.
Yes, so Wizard of Oz did. That one's on the list I have in front of me. But Jaws.
Oh, but he might have was hired and didn't do anything.
One more question I just want to ask you guys. And this is a little bit more of, again, an abstract future question. Is that, considering what Lucasfilm now has done, and I think something happened with The Force Awakens. Because, Zinger, did you hear this too? That back they were going to do a making of Force Awakens book. And then unceremoniously it was canceled and nobody ever talked about it again. Do you remember hearing that?
That's new to me, which I think is interesting, because I mean, I try to keep my finger vaguely on the pulse of stuff.
Darren, you remember that, right?
What was that again? Sorry,
remember they were going to do a making of Force Awakens book and they were taking pre-orders for it. Oh, and then out of nowhere they canceled it like unceremoniously.
Yeah,
and that was the end of it.
Yeah,
I remember it was talked about, like, I know Star Wars Newsnet, making StarWars.net, they talked about this.
Well, and that's what I mean, though. I think something had happened, or maybe it was just a series of incidents, happened on the Force Awakens, whether it be pre-production, principal, or post-production, and something happened there, where it was not an ideal experience for the, maybe not the actors, but for the directors, the filmmakers.
Yeah,
and honestly, and we all know Rogue One had more than fair share of its problems. And like I said, Episode 8 seems to be its own little. It seems to be fine. Like, I don't think I've heard one negative thing come out of that movie, outside of the fact that Mark Hamill isn't thrilled with the direction they're taking Luke Skywalker. And he seems to be backtracking on that.
I think that was kind of taken out of context from what.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Let me add one more thing, just because I found it funny. You can edit this out if you want to. But. Dick Richards was hired to direct Jaws, but he was let go because he kept calling the shark a whale.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. I remember reading, I remember watching, like in the 100 Jaws documentaries there are. Yes, and they did, the producers did fire him because he kept calling him that. Yep.
What an odd thing to get fired for. You think they would just tell him a couple times? And
well, they did. Apparently, he couldn't tell the difference between a shark and a... Okay. A whale. I remember if you watch any of those documentaries about Jaws, that comes up in almost every single one of them. Yeah.
Okay.
But Jaws had a ton of problems too. Like, as we all know, Jaws is one of those films they could not make anything work right.
And that's what made it great. So who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, the as far as Force Awakens goes, problem wise, the only thing I heard was like, you know, there's a whole thing about, you know, Harrison Ford with his leg that pushed back production by a few weeks. The other issue was also with chemistry ish matters with John Boyega and Daisy Ridley's character. That there were just something going on there that they just weren't having good chemistry in some scenes because of what happened with Han Solo. With Harrison Ford, they were able to go back and reshoot that. They finally got the thing. And this comes back also with certain stories about how Daisy really was sounding a little, like, bland, a little wooden, and, just wasn't coming off the way that JJ was wanting her. I think they corrected that, though, eventually, after a couple of, takes.
That's not an issue, though. Like an actor giving a bad take or two is not going to derail a film. But thing that's worth bringing up with The Force Awakens, though, The Force Awakens was originally slotted for May of 2015, and it's because and the excuse they always gave for that was that Abrams couldn't crack the story. Because remember, Abrams threw out Michael Arndt's draft of the script, and he started anew with Lawrence Kasdan.
Yep. Right.
And if you think about it, think of how that changed how Star Wars kind of works now. It's like ever since they postponed, because I know Bob Iger really wanted Star Wars out for that May 2015 so they could have the initial merchandise run in the summer, and then come the holidays have their entire second wave of merchandise. Yeah, that's really thrown them for a loop, the fact that merchandise basically exclusively runs around the fall and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense to release a movie in May, the toys, and then the DVD in October.
Yeah, and they get the cash in on it twice.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because Walmart's not going to order any more figures, and you can't find them.
Who knows? I don't know. Maybe there's more to it, though. But that's worth bringing up with J.J. Abrams, though, is that he did miss their original deadline by how many months?
And there's something different about J.J. Abrams. I might not agree, but it seems from everything I read that Disney wanted J.J. Abrams more than J.J. Abrams wanted it. So they let him probably do a lot more. Because I heard he didn't want to do it, and they really had to talk him into it. And Spielberg kept pushing him, saying, you got to give it to this guy. So I think they gave him a lot more free range, and they gave him,
I've heard, you are, the first part of that you're correct on. Because I remember following all the rumors for that. And as you guys probably remember, they wanted a little bit of everybody. I heard the closest person that got near The Force Awakens other than JJ was Matthew Vaughn, and Matthew Vaughn did not like what they were doing, so he walked away from it.
Right.
So I think Matthew Vaughn walked away from X-Men Days of Future Past for that. He was flirting with episode 7 enough that he felt that, okay, I can do this over X-Men, and then when it fell through, he kind of had to go do Kingsman.
Right, I also remember I thought it was Vince Vaughn for months.
Oh, wow. We can only hope Vince Vaughn makes a Star Wars film. Maybe he'll pick up the pieces here. But no, this getting right back into my final question I just wanted to ask is, like we stated, Lucasfilms had not a horrible track record with directors, but they've, like I said before, they're kind of two for two when it comes to kicking filmmakers off their film. And this is my question.
Maybe three.
It could be. Well, Trank deserved it, so we're not going to blame them for Trank. Trank ruined his career, and that's his own fault.
That happened early enough that I don't
blame Lucasfilm for Trank. But no, going back to what I was just saying there real quick, is that considering what they've done with directors, by now showing the world or the Hollywood community that they will in fact throw a filmmaker, or in this case filmmakers, off their film if they don't like what you're doing, does this at all poison the well for getting talent going down the road? Let me just give an example real quick, just to kind of further flesh out my point. Or did you guys see Ex Machina?
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. But you know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
All right. The director of that film is a guy named Alex Garland. Let's pretend Alex Garland is in negotiations to sign on for whatever this new spinoff film is. And just for the sake of argument, let's just pretend it's Boba Fett just to make it sound good. So cool. Alex Garland is about to sign on for the Boba Fett standalone movie. And as we know, as anybody who's seen Ex Machina knows, the guy has a vision and he knows what he wants. He's more in line with Rian Johnson and Lord Miller. He knows what he wants and he has a voice. If you're him right now and you're about to sign on to Boba Fett. Again, the contract hasn't been signed. Does something like this make you nervous? Where it makes you go, do I really want to sign on to a film where, unless my vision coincides with the studio's, which is probably very slim, do I want to take this on?
Good question. I think most of them probably know that, I would think. But it does probably reinforce it because, I mean, Lord Miller probably might have thought, hey, what are they going to do, fire us? We're 4 months into this thing. So at least it will show that Disney is going to get rid of you if you're not playing ball or going the route they want it.
I think, thinking about directing a Star Wars film, I think a lot of people do see it as an honor to be chosen to direct a Star Wars film. I think those that, want to have that under their belt and in their credit and their CVs will compromise with doing what the studio wants them to do. Those that don't, they will not choose it after all. They won't do it. That's just my opinion. It just, depends.
Yeah, all right.
I will say though that I know we got a counter for the prequels, but I'm gonna say this real quick that back when they were coming out, before they were coming out, Lucas was actually trying to get people to direct the prequels. One of them was Ron Howard, one of them was Zemeckis. Ultimately they decided not to, and they told Lucas, why don't you direct? You should direct it. They're your films. I think because at the time probably people thought that Star Wars was just too special, just for anyone to direct. They probably felt too scared to direct it or something. I don't know. So there could be that feeling too right now that there are too many directors that don't want to touch something that's too beloved because they're afraid that they'll ruin something or they'll put a stain on the franchise.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's why they're going after the younger, not really seasoned directors, the one that kind of need that on their resume more than, say, I mean, you're not going to get Christopher Nolan. He's not going to play ball.
Yeah. All right, Zanger, what do you think?
Well, first I want to say, if there is any Disney execs or anyone listening, I will be a shill for you, and I will direct the rest of this movie, however you want me to. Don't care. But, no, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think some people have, a lot of directors are kind of don't want to go near Star Wars because, maybe it's something they don't think that their vision would be what they would want to do would be acceptable. And maybe there is this stigma of you have to toe the company line while you do these. And that may be something that a lot of directors don't want to play ball with. And I don't know. It's a lot of different things with this, but I think I see the problem they had though. They tried to get two directors to direct a Solo movie.
Oh man!
See what you did.
We finally figured out what just went wrong with this movie, folks.
I there you go. I did it. You're welcome.
You've been saving up the entire time for this, right? You've been sitting here for an hour and a half just waiting to drop that on us.
Oh, I wrote on my note the second we turned on the mics. And I've just been sitting on it and waiting, just like the right moment, just to, bam, right there. No, it's just, sorry for the bad pun, but it's just, I mean, this movie's going to happen. It's going to be out. It's going to happen somehow. It's just all a matter of, is it going to be out on time? Is it going to be out later? And who are they just going to get to throw into that spot? Because I kind of think Disney will just put whoever they want to, who wants to play ball, because, I mean, think about it. You'll be the person that saved this movie, you'll be possibly put in the light of you were the director who saved this movie.
Now, I want to play devil's advocate to that. Okay. But at the same time, doesn't it show that you have no artistic integrity, that you're just willing to obviously Lord Miller were fired because they wouldn't toe the company line. And by going in, doesn't that make you look like a scab, relatively speaking?
Paycheck still cash the same.
Yeah, but in the
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I don't disagree with you. I trust me, like you said, if Lucasfilm called me tomorrow and said, hey, you want to pick up the pieces to this? I'd be like, sure. But at the same time, though, it's like in the world of, again, Christopher Nolan's and all this, there would be it's kind of like Peyton Reed with Ant-Man. It's like, did Peyton Reed make a serviceable Ant-Man movie? Absolutely. But at the same time, though, he went in as a person that had no really artistic vision and played with the sandbox Marvel gave him without any real sort of input.
Right.
But it is in the back of all of our minds too on what that movie might have been like if.
Absolutely. And that's the thing about those, that by Peyton Reed going in there and so easily listening, doing what Marvel wanted, constantly, they said jump and he said how high. We will never even get a glimpse of that, that Edgar Wright film. Well, there might be traces of it in the Peyton Reed film, but we're never going to get that full thing because there was never any sort of pushback from the community.
Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I don't know. If we had an answer for this, we wouldn't be here. Right now.
It reminds me. Sorry, I was just gonna say. It reminds me of Suicide Squad. With the director of that film, you know, they had mentioned that you know, he did a lot of scenes and such. And it seemed like, you know, the cut that they chose for them, for what they released in theaters wasn't what he had envisioned. So, you know, this all comes back to the whole, you know, studio input and studio interference. So that just, you know, you just reminded me of that, that, you know, he actually did have something there. And this, but the studio came in and they're like, it's better to do it this way. And you know, we saw what happened. But anyways, what were you going to say?
So the studio gets a lot of bad flack, but at the end of the day, it's their money. So they're paying for everything. So you got to kind of do what they want. You know what I'm saying? I mean.
I agree with you.
So let's wrap this up with a nice, clean bow. Now that we've discussed this for 90 minutes, starting with Darren, now, who do you think, who's to blame? Ultimately, who do you think, if you had to pick one party, even if it was by a hair, who's to blame here?
I can't pick a party, but I'll say, because I think they're all in on it, but I think when you go against the guy that basically created Han Solo, and you tell him, no, that's not how we see Han Solo, this is how we see him, then something's wrong there, because you have to go by the guy that knows Han Solo better than anybody else.
All right, Mark?
Like I said earlier, the buck stops with the studio. You know, they're the ones that, you know, they're the ones that hired, you know, the two directors, Miller and Lord. You know, they saw what, you know, they had done initially. They were like, I'm not too sure about this, but we're going to still give them a chances, and maybe we could still tweak some things along the way. And then, you know, dragged on till now, and, you know, then they pulled the plug finally now, and, you know, which is very abrupt. So, you know, this all falls back to the studio. I'm hoping that they can salvage the film, and, you know, and Hansel, and they get a new guy in, and ultimately the whole product comes out being fine, but, yeah, this all, you know, this is all going to fall on them.
All right. Sanger?
I'm going to chalk this one up to an unpopular opinion. Maybe we're to blame as fans for setting such a high opinion of these movies and putting this much pressure on the studios, on the directors, on everything that goes on with this. They have to put it out perfectly. Otherwise, you will be flame broiled on the internet for the foreseeable future and never and be memed and everything else in the world. But to be honest, I mean, I guess the studio for letting it get to this point, if they really weren't happy with it, why did they let it keep going for this long?
Right.
And like I said, I'm playing devil's advocate because earlier I said, you know, maybe they were just letting this go because they're like, we can salvage it, we can salvage it. And then just something tipped over the edge or they're like, nope, get them out. So.
Hey Zach, can we do one more thing before we go?
Oh, sure. Please, go ahead.
Okay. A percentage from everybody that you think they'll stay at that May release date, or they'll move it.
It will move. It will move. I'd say I'm 95% sure that release date will not be there. It will be moved.
Yeah, I agree. Low 90s.
I'm going to be a little bit more conservative. I'm going to go with 60% chance that they'll move it.
I'm gonna look at it this way. If they can announce a new director before the 4th of July, it will stay at the same release date. If we don't hear anything past the 4th of July holiday, it's getting pushed. Because there's no way they're going to be able to sit there, get everything back into traction that fast.
Don't you think they know who they're going to get, that they did all that, worked all that out before they made this announcement?
No, because if they did, everything I read on the internet, it seems like Lord and Miller only found out about this Monday afternoon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Within 24 hours, they had to release a statement to the press because they were afraid of it leaking out.
It might not be written in ink, but I'm pretty sure.
I think they probably have short list, but I still think it's like anything in Hollywood. Every part of the contract has to be fleshed out. And the problem is that for anything can break down. Conversations break down all the time. I think that's what it's, if they had a replacement in store immediately, it would have been put out with the same press release. So it was like, oh, guys, the house is on fire. Good news. The fire truck just pulled up. The fact that we did not get that in the same announcement leads me to believe they have nothing. They might have ideas or they might have something close, but it's nothing in concrete.
Yeah, and I've heard today that the extras have been told to go home and everything's closed down. Everybody's kind of on call, so that's not a good sign that they're planning to start anytime soon.
Next question is, if it does get pushed back, you know, how far does it get pushed back? Or we're just going to say December.
Is there any other place they could put it?
I mean, I can't see it. They're going to either have May or December, and I can't see them pushing it out of 2017 unless they really got to scrap and start over.
17 or 18?
Oh, what's next year? Well, 18, you're right. We're in 17 now.
What I'm saying is, like, do you foresee it, like, if they do push it back, do you foresee it them pushing it back to, like, September or October of 2018?
Nah, I mean, it's going to be, I think they want that early summer or that Christmas season. So I think even if it's ready, they'll hold it till December if they can't make May.
Sorry, I don't have really an opinion on that per se. I'll go with, you know, if they're going to push it back, it's probably going to be in December. And I do agree that May or December is the two release dates. Sorry, I didn't have anything really insightful on that one.
All right, I'll come to your rescue. I'm going to throw you a Hail Mary. August 15th, 2018 will be the 10-year anniversary of the Clone Wars.
Good. Well, at least I was right. I was guessing it was August.
August 15th, 2018 for the 10-year anniversary of the Clone Wars film. You know what? Editing.
You can make us all look bad.
Yep, I'm going to do that right now. I don't care if it sounds disjointed or awful. I'm going to put it that way. So concludes this episode of the Star Wars Junk Podcast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Star Wars Junk and at SW Junk Podcast and at the web at StarWarsJunk.net. As always, please leave us a review on iTunes. Make sure to check out SkywardFunSupply.com for all your toy needs. For questions, comments, concerns, or snide remarks, contact me, Zach, on Twitter at Rogue Knight, KNITE. Where can people find you guys?
You can find me on Twitter at SW Mega Fan. That's SWMEGAFAN.
Okay, and you can find me, of course, Star Wars Junk, but we got a lot of crazy videos at youtube.com/StarWarsJunk.
And you can find me, Zinger, on the Zing This Podcast. That is spelled Zeng. This, where me and my other half, Ellie, discuss nerdy topics every week, and we are doing a year-long celebration to Star Wars, where every month we kind of do an in-depth discussion on each of the movies. Check us out.
All right. Sounds good to me. As someone who's listened to the podcast, I highly recommend it. It's a fun listen. All right. I'd like to thank Zanger for coming on. It was a genuine pleasure to have him this time, and we hope to have many more fruitful podcasts with his involvement.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Good night, everyone.